The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, Chapter number 29, Text number 10, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on January 21st, 2007, in Lambasa, Fiji.
So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter number 29, Text number 10.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Karma
niharam udhisya parasmin vaptadarpanam yajadyastavyamitiva pritagbhavas sattvika.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. When a devotee worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead and offers the results of activities, offers the results of his activities in order to free himself from the inebrieties of fruitive activities, his devotion is in the mode of goodness. Purport. The Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, along with the Brahmacharis, Grihasthas, Vanaprasthas, and Sannyasis, are the members of the 8 divisions of Varnas and Ashrams, and they have their respective duties to perform for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When such activities are performed and the results are offered to the Supreme Lord, they are called Karmarpanam, duties performed for the satisfaction of the Lord. If there is any inebriety or fault, it is atoned for by this offering process. But if this offering process is the mode of goodness rather than in pure devotion, then the interest is different. The 4 ashrams and the 4 varnas act for some benefit in accordance with their personal interests. Therefore, such activities are in the mode of goodness. They cannot be counted in the category of pure devotion. Pure devotional service, as described by Rupa Goswami, is free from all material desires, anyabhilashita shunyam. There can be no excuse for personal or material interest. Devotional activities should be transcendental to fruitive activities and empiric philosophical speculation. Pure devotional service is transcendental to all material qualities. Devotional service in the modes of ignorance, passion, and goodness can be divided into 81 categories. There are different devotional activities, such as hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping, offering prayer, rendering service, and surrendering everything. And each of them can be divided into 3 qualitative categories. There is hearing in the mode of passion, in the mode of ignorance, and in the mode of goodness. Similarly, there is chanting in the mode of ignorance, passion, and goodness, etc. 3 multiplied by 9 equals 27. And when again multiplied by 3, it becomes 81. One has to transcend all such mixed materialistic devotional service in order to reach the standard of pure devotional service as explained in the next verses. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Shakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Shtapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. So the standard is actually very high. Pure devotional service, even the mode of goodness is an impurity. You consider what a high standard it is to become a pure devotee. To render devotional service in the mode of goodness means I'm doing it for the purpose of getting free from the results of fruitive activity. I don't want to suffer the results of previous activities. So to get free from those, having to suffer those results, I take up pure devotional, I take up devotional service in the mode of goodness. But as we have studied previously, the pure devotee, the one who is spotlessly pure, he is described in this verse from the 10th canto, Tate nukampam sushamikshamano bunjana evadma kritang vapakam tadvagvapurvir vidadang namaste jiveta yomukti pade sadhaya bhak. My dear Lord, those persons who are constantly expecting your causeless mercy to be bestowed upon them, who go on suffering the resultant reactions of their past misdeeds, always offering you from the innermost core of their heart respectful obeisances. For such persons, their liberation is already assured. It has become their rightful claim. So the platform of pure devotional service is already beyond liberation. One is performing devotional service in the mode of goodness. He wants to become liberated from the results of his fruitive activities. But when he comes to the point of not even being concerned about that anymore, of I have to get free of the resultant actions of my previous activities, when he gets to the point where he's happily accepting whatever may come as the mercy of Krishna, just like Kunti Devi, when he reaches that point where everything is wonderful for him, even if there's some reactions, even if there are apparent reactions, it doesn't matter. He's taking everything at the mercy of Krishna. He's relishing everything. You see, that's the platform of pure devotional service. Of course, to render devotional service for the sake of being liberated, that's very good. But it's not good enough. It's only the mode of goodness. To render pure devotional service simply for the sake of pleasing Krishna, that even if Krishna never liberates me from this material existence, even I have to rot in the cycle of birth and death for all of eternity, still I would go on serving Krishna with love. You see, that's pure devotion. In the mode of goodness, thinking, well, performing devotional service so I can get liberated. I still have something I want in exchange for my service. Even though it's a very nice thing, it's still something I want. You see? That I will serve Krishna if he will liberate me. It's a condition, you see. But if one is willing to serve Krishna, even if he never liberates me, what do we sing in Guru Puja? Prabhu se janme Prabhu se, you are my worshipful Lord Guru Maharaj, life after lifetime. You see? Even if I have to stay in this material existence forever, you see, that's all right. See, that's the position of pure devotional service. He's even free from the desire for liberation. He's just happy to serve Krishna. That person is already beyond liberation. Mukti is serving him. It's described like the Prabhupada Sarasvati. For such a pure devotee, liberation is there serving him. He's not hankering for liberation. He's simply happily engaged in serving Krishna in all conditions. So how do we get there? That's the desirable position to be in. How do we get there? So serving in the mode of goodness is good. That I want to go back to Godhead, I want to get out of my suffering, so let me do devotional service. That's very good. And gradually by doing that, the devotee will become purified and he'll come to the platform of pure devotional service. The point is, you can't just say, well, I'm not going to do devotional service in the mode of goodness. That's artificial. You can't just, we can't artificially say, well, I don't really care about getting free from my suffering. We can't artificially do that. The mode of goodness is a very good position to go to the next step of pure goodness. It's like if you're traveling somewhere, just like today, we are traveling to Suva. So, how do we, the first step is to go to the airport. The airport is not our destination, but it's a step. By getting, the airport is a suitable place from which to catch the plane to Suva. So pure devotional service in the mode of goodness is the like the airport where you catch the plane in pure devotional service. So it's very good. That's why we are meant to come to the brahminical platform. As described, Shamadamata Sapasha Sham Shantirajamcha Gyanam Vyanamastakram Bharma Karmas Pavavajam. To control the mind, to control the senses, to be peaceful, to be clean, to be honest, to be austere. You see, these qualities in the mode of goodness, they are very, very conducive for achieving pure devotional service. So we cultivate the mode of goodness. Rising early, taking bath, being very clean, suchi. You see. And then when we get the second initiation, we chant our Gayatri mantra nicely, the three sanjas, morning, noon, and evening. In this way, we cultivate the mode of goodness. With this Hare Krishna mantra, that carries us beyond everything. That's the most important mantra. Some people say, well, can I just chant Gayatri mantra? Gayatri is not the Maha mantra. The Maha mantra is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. That mantra, there is no desire, nothing is being asked in exchange in that mantra. Simply devotee wants to give everything for Krishna, that's all. Everything for Krishna. That pure devotional service is very, very rarely achieved. So if we have the opportunity of having come in contact with a bona fide spiritual master, and if we have been blessed with the seed of pure bhakti planted in the heart by hearing submissively the words emanating from his lotus mouth, if we find ourselves in that very opportune situation, then we should cultivate pure devotional service. Shavanam kirtanam Vishnu smaranam padasayivanam. In this way we can cultivate pure devotional service. Hearing about Krishna, chanting Krishna, remembering Krishna. Krishna means the name, the fame, the form, the pastime, the entourage, the paraphernalia, the teachings, the dham. So, what is the entourage of Krishna? That is his devotees. Krishna is not alone. When he travels about the universe, he takes his entourage with him. It's like a traveling roadshow. Many years ago, ISKCON had the traveling roadshow. It was a very wonderful festival program. We would travel, and we had three buses, and we would travel from place to place. And they would pay money, and we would, you know, give us an auditorium, and we would put on a big production. The story of one boy who became a devotee. It was a whole rock opera about how a boy became a devotee. Prabhupada actually came and watched us do the rock opera. He very much appreciated it. He was the only one that applauded. In those days, we thought karmis applaud, devotees don't applaud. So we were surprised that actually at the end of each part of the rock opera, nobody would applaud, but one person was sitting there applauding, and that was Prabhupada. But we had the original Radha-Damodar deities who became famous of the Radha-Damodar traveling Sankirtan party. These here were named after the big ones. So Radha-Damodar were traveling from city to city to city to bestow their mercy on the conditioned souls, and we were their entourage. Three school buses full of devotees. Well, actually we fit in one bus. We had the equipment and the kitchen and the temple, all the paraphernalia also. The paraphernalia and the entourage of Sri Sri Radha-Damodar were traveling. There was a deity room in the back of one bus, and there was the kitchen. The kitchen bus had the deity room in the back, and then the kitchen in the front with all the pots, the pans, the stoves, the spices, the vegetables, the fruits, etc., etc. So that was the paraphernalia of Sri Sri Radha-Damodar. And then the entourage was all the devotees. So just as Radha-Damodar were traveling all over the east coast of the United States with their entourage and their paraphernalia, Krishna is traveling throughout the multi-universes with his entourage and his paraphernalia. So by meditating on Krishna directly, or by meditating on Krishna's devotees, or on Krishna's paraphernalia, just like Jamuna River goes with him, of course that's also a person. Everything, even Krishna's paraphernalia, is also his entourage. Because his flute, for example, you could say that's paraphernalia, but actually it's a person. So actually there's no difference between entourage and paraphernalia. That flute is a person. The different flutes of Krishna, they are all different personalities who got that service of being Krishna's flute. Actually, it's described, the bamboos of Vrindavan are standing very tall in ecstasy. Why? Because their relative is the flute of Krishna. Sometimes people think, well, if you're going to go back to Gaudiya, you have to be a gopi. I mean, you wouldn't want to be something besides a gopi. Why would you want to be in a less complete rasa? But, you know, that's a mistaken understanding of the rasa of the spiritual world, because the flute, he is thinking. Even though he is in Shantaras, serving Krishna in Shantarasa, he simply doesn't do anything. He just sits there in neutral positions. But he is thinking, I am more fortunate than the gopis. Because Krishna only kisses the gopis every now and then, but he's kissing me constantly. You see? So in the spiritual world, every single devotee, he's so happy and satisfied in his particular rasas, a cowherd boy, a cowherd girl, a flute, a butterfly, a rock, a blade of grass. Whatever rasa everyone has in the spiritual world, they feel completely satisfied that my rasa is the best rasa. Just like in ISKCON, someone thinks, well, I'm a pujari and that's the best service. Or I'm a book distributor and that's the best service. Or I'm a temple manager and that's the best service. Everyone feels that somehow I've gotten the best service. I'm a traveling preacher and that's the best service. You see. So in the spiritual world, everyone feels that they are in the best position. So no one is feeling, oh, I couldn't be a gopi. I had to be a cowherd boy. No. No one thinks like that. Yeah, and Prabhupada explains actually in one conversation that one can change one's rasa also. If that desire is there to be something different. It's described, the kalpa viksha tree, they fulfill all desires. So if one wants to be something different, one can be. It's not that you're locked into a rasa, well, I have to be this, I have to do this particular service, and I don't want to do this, but I have to be surrendered. It's not like that. In the spiritual world, there is full freedom to serve Krishna in any capacity. But generally, they simply stay in their position because they're unlimitedly satisfied in whatever their position is. So the spiritual world is very, very wonderful, sublime place. It's inconceivably wonderful, and that happiness that is experienced in the spiritual world, you can experience it here now in this material world. It's described that Arjuna actually always stays in this material world. Did you know that? Prabhupada explains that. Arjuna stays in the material world. So does that mean he's missing out on the nectar? No. Arjuna is getting unlimited nectar serving Krishna in that capacity to be with him again and again and again in his pastimes in this material existence. So the point is, right here, right now, we simply have to adopt the mood of being completely, totally surrendered to whatever Krishna wants me to do. It's not that the nectar is somewhere else, in a different place, in a different service, in a different time. No. The unlimited nectar of pure bhakti, a haitiki bhakti, is available right here, right now for you. All we have to do is come into the proper mood. That, my dear Lord Krishna, whatever you want to do with me, I am yours. Take me, use me in any way you want. It doesn't matter. Look at Bali Maharaj. Can you imagine? He surrenders to Vamanadeva, and what's the result? He's pushed into the nether regions. He surrenders to Krishna, and he's pushed into hell. Can you imagine? So is he thinking, Lord, why are you doing this? I surrender to you, this isn't fair. Did he complain? No. He took it as mercy, as the sweetest nectar. Whatever Krishna does with me, that's all right. You know that story, whatever Krishna does is all right? There was one king. And he had prime minister. Prime minister was very Krishna conscious. So the prime minister, he would always say, whatever Krishna does is all right. So one day the king had some accident and he cut off his finger. The prime minister said, don't worry, your majesty, whatever Krishna does is all right. So the king became very angry. What? I lost my finger. You're saying it's all right? Go in the dungeon, you rascal. He said, you locked up the prime minister in the dungeon. So you know the Kshatriyas in Vedic culture, they would go hunting in the forest so the sages would not be disturbed by the wild animals, and so that they could practice the killing art. The politicians in those days, they were brave, men of courage. They would lead the charge on the battlefield. So they had to be very expert in killing. Just like in any school, like anything you do, if you don't practice it, you lose it. So they would have to practice the killing art to stay, you know, keep their skills and very sharp. So the king, he was on a normal hunting trip in the forest, and some dacoits, they captured him. They are worshippers of goddess Kali. They would capture human beings that they would find in the forest and offer them as human sacrifice to goddess Kali. So they captured the king. They were going to offer him to goddess Kali as a sacrifice. They gave him new silk clothing. They gave him dinner, his last meal. They were preparing to sacrifice him to goddess Kali, but they realized they had overlooked something. He was missing one finger. And they realized, if we offer goddess Kali this imperfect body, she'll be very angry, so we better not let him go. You see. So the king, of course, was greatly relieved. And he was thinking, you know, that prime minister was right. Whatever Krishna does is all right. My life was saved. So let me go back and apologize to the prime minister. Let me hurry back to the palace, go down to the dungeon, personally open the door and fall at his feet and beg his forgiveness for locking him up. So he did that. The prime minister was just sitting there in complete ecstasy. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The king said, you're not angry with me? He said, "Your Majesty, why I should be angry? You know, when you go on those hunting trips, you always take me with you and I have all my fingers." Whatever Krishna does is all right. So, in this way, if we can always feel and understand that Krishna's hand is there at every step, Krishna is moving and acting in every single square inch of the entire totality of existence. There's nowhere Krishna is not acting. He's acting in your house, he's acting in your house, he's acting in your heart. Everything that happens to you is orchestrated by Krishna. So you simply have to see how Krishna is perfectly acting at every step to bestow the greatest mercy upon you. We have a tendency to think, well, why is this happening to me? I didn't deserve this. I surrendered to Krishna. Why? No. Surrender to Krishna means not some business deal. That Krishna, I surrendered to you and now you're putting me into suffering, so therefore I'm going to give up your service. No. Surrender means whatever you give me. You can reward me, you can punish me. In every single condition, I am simply your devotee. That's all. You see? That is called devotional service. And that mood completely liberates one from all forms of suffering. Completely, totally liberates one from all forms of suffering. That mood is the mood of the inhabitants of the spiritual world. And we can enter into that consciousness of the spiritual world right here, right now, today, at this very minute in Mombasa, Fiji, here in this room. Each and every one of us can enter into this mood of pure devotional service. We simply have to understand what it is and understand that this is what I have to do if I want to really become the pure devotee. I have to accept whatever Krishna gives me with complete gratitude and then move forward to please Him in every possible way with my every thought, my every word, my every deed. So only this move will give us satisfaction. If we do devotional service for the sake of, well, you know, having a good reputation in the temple or for any other purpose, even if it's a good purpose, for getting liberated, that will not satisfy us fully. Serving with a mood for liberation, that will give some satisfaction. Because it's the mode of goodness. But serving without any motive even of being liberated, that motive, I mean that consciousness, is already liberated. You're already liberated. You come to that position. So that mood we must cultivate. Ahaitaki apratiyata yayatma supersedati. Then we will taste the sweetest nectar. Vamasaukyam tvanantam. Nayam deho deha bhajang naloke. Kashtan kaman arhate vidbujangye. Tapodyavyam putrka yena sattvam. Shudyad yashmad brahma saukyam tvanantam. This was the wonderful advice given by Rishabhadev to his 100 sons, headed by Bharat Maharaj, after whom this planet is known. This whole planet was Bharat. Now we say Bharat, India, but actually Bharat, the whole planet was India. This was part of India. When Krishna banished Kaliya, to send Kaliya back here, Kaliya was coming to another part of India, Bharat. The whole place was India, Bharat. So that Bharat is named after the Bharat, who was the chief son of Rishabhadev. And he told Bharat and the other son, 99 sons, "My dear boys, do not misuse this human form of life, which is rarely obtained, to imitate the ways of the dogs and the hogs that eat stool. We've always heard, actually, that the hogs eat stool, but where have we seen the dogs eating stool? Actually, I have seen. The dogs also eat stool sometimes, I've seen. So, we should not imitate the stool-eating dogs and hogs. Rishabhadeva advises to us in these ways. Rather, you should utilize this rare human birth, tapo divyam, perform austerities to achieve divyam, that divine transcendental position, devotional service. In that position, your heart will become purified, and in that purified state, you will taste unlimited happiness that goes on increasing unlimitedly, exponentially, forever. So this is what Prabhupada wants. This is what our acharyas are asking us. The spiritual master wants that the disciples shall come to the position of pure devotional service. Because only in that way will the devotee become satisfied. And the spiritual master, he has the responsibility to see that each and every disciple is delivered. I recently read one letter that Prabhupada says the spiritual master stays in this material world until all of his disciples go back to Godhead. So the spiritual master has a good reason to make sure that all of his disciples become pure devotees. Of course, one may say then, that means the spiritual master didn't go back to Godhead? One could ask. But actually, Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavatam purports how Pallad Maharaj is simultaneously existing in the Vaikuntha realm and also in the material world. So the spiritual master actually can do both things. He's not limited like an ordinary personality. The pure devotee, spiritual master, he can be existing in the spiritual world and also remain here to help his disciples. You may ask, well, how does he do that? Prabhupada actually gives one example of a spiritual master who came back again to save his disciple. You know that Bilva Mangala Thakur? Yes. His Guru Maharaj, what was the name? Somagiri? Yes, his Guru Maharaj in his previous lifetime came back in the form of Chintamani, the prostitute, to save his fallen disciple. You know that story? You know that story? Yeah, Bibha Mangala Thakur. In his previous life, Prabhupada explains, he had come all the way to the bhava stage, which is almost prema. It's just this preliminary stage of pure devotional service. He was almost there, 99.999999% pure. But he didn't quite make it. And he came back as in a wealthy family. And you know, if you got a lot of money, you got a lot of facility for sense enjoyment. So he became a playboy, running after the women. You see. He fell down from his exalted position. And he had a girlfriend, a beautiful girlfriend, prostitute girlfriend, Chintamani. So he was always enjoying with her every chance he could get. And one night it was raining like anything. The monsoon season was on. It was raining like anything. It was a dark night. And he got this lusty urge, oh, I must go to Chintamani. But the river, the creek, or the, you know, the river that was separating his house from Chintamani's house, it was swollen. It was huge. It wasn't easy to cross. But he jumped in. He said, well, I'll just grab a hold of this looks like a log. I'll just grab a hold of it and float across. It turned out to be a corpse. He didn't mind that he was holding on to a corpse. Who would want to hold on to a corpse? But he didn't mind. He was so lusty for Chintamani. He would say, that's all right, I'll just hold on to the corpse. Somehow get across the river of Chintamani. You see? And then he got to her house and the gate was locked. But he said, well, I'll just grab some vine and I'll crawl up. But it turned out to be a snake and he didn't mind. He didn't care. Grabbing onto a snake, holding onto a corpse. Somehow I got to get to Chintamani. And he finally got to Chintamani. And she was amazed. You have come to me in the dead of night, in this storm, holding onto a corpse, holding onto a snake. If you are only so devoted to Krishna as you are to this rotting body of a woman, you see. If you're only so devoted to Krishna as you are to this rotting female body, how much better you would be. And he came to his senses and he realized, yes, what a fool I have been. I'm running after a female's body, which is nothing but blood and pus and urine, just packaged in a different way than my body. It's the same thing, just a slightly different packaging, that's all. You see, there's no difference really. It's the same blood and pus and bones and stool and urine and mucus and bile, all the wonderful ingredients, you see. So he said, all right, I'm going to Vrindavan, that's it. I'm going to give up this world, I will go to Vrindavan. So on the way to Vrindavan, he was walking down the road and there was a beautiful Shudra woman. And again, his mind became attractive. So he followed her home. He was actually a Brahmin. So in those days, the Brahmins were given great respect, like gods practically. If a Brahmin showed up in a Sudra's home, the Sudra would say, whatever you want, you can have. So he followed the woman home and the husband said, if you want to enjoy my wife, here, you are Brahmin. So then he was with the woman and he said, Mataji, give me your hairpin. He put out his eyes, the hairpin. Made himself blind. Because he realized, I was going to Vrindavan. I had realized I must surrender to Krishna. But now these eyes have diverted me. I saw a woman's form and I was again captivated. So now I put out these eyes, this hairpin. So in this way he became a blind man. But somehow he got to Vrindavan as a blind man. And he lived there for 700 years in Vrindavan as a great pure devotee. And Krishna would come to him regularly. So this is a great devotee, Bilva Mangala Thakur. We can pray for his blessings. If we can become free of all material desires and become also the pure devotees. So in this way, this pure devotional service is very, very, very wonderful thing. If we take this pathway very seriously, not putting out the eyes, but by using instead of putting out the eyes with the hairpin, we use these eyes to gaze upon the beautiful, beautiful forms of Sri Sri Radha Vrindavan Chandra. We use these eyes to gaze upon the beautiful form of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada and to see the beautiful, wonderful, how the devotees are singing and dancing in the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's transcendental movement. We use the eyes to see the wonderful transcendental sense objects, the beautiful paintings and the books. So in this way we engage the eyes in seeing the beautiful form of our spiritual master. In this way we will not become misled and we can also achieve the platform of pure devotional service. So, I can ask now if there's any questions. Time is up. We'll have some questions. One quick question.
he knows he's a sinful nature. He's a sin. And why they commit so sinful activities?
You understand the question?
You said the living entities knowingly committing the sinful activities, mm-hmm. well, and they know, and still they commit.
Yes, we are impelled by lust. Even knowingly, sometimes one will do something they know is wrong. But lust is so strong. Just like people, sometimes they're just so carried, they get angry, they know they're doing the wrong thing, but the anger just carries them away. You see? It's like that. The material nature is like that. That's why one has to train oneself how to control the senses. Because even if someone knows something is wrong, they still do it. But the senses are so agitated that they can't check them. So we have to train the senses. That's why rising early in the morning, putting tilak on the body, chanting the holy names, dressing in devotional clothing, bowing down before the Lord. These enable us to keep our senses under control so the senses don't carry us away. Indriyanam hi charatam yamano nu vidyate tasha hadati, that verse. As a boat on the water is swept away by a strong wind, even one of the senses on which the mind focuses can carry away a man's intelligence. He may know it's bad, but that intelligence will be carried away by the sensual desire. So we have to keep those senses fixed 24 hours. We have to be Goswamis. We have to keep those senses fixed 24 hours a day in Krishna's service. That will protect us. Yes.
Is this the result of having a strong desire to enjoy and not to serve Krishna?
Strong desire to enjoy?
Enjoy aside from Krishna.
Aside from Krishna.
From spiritual world, isn't that the reason we are here? Because we wanted to enjoy separately from Krishna?
Yes. We gave up our wonderful position in the spiritual world because we were envious that why Krishna should be the one who gets all the service? Why Krishna should be the enjoyer? Why I cannot be the enjoyer? Spiritual world, everyone serves Krishna's enjoyment. No one cares for their own enjoyment. They just want to see that Krishna is enjoying. So if one thinks, well, why should I give Krishna enjoyment? Why not I get the enjoyment? Then they come here to the material world to try doing that until they realize it's a ridiculous waste of time to try doing that, because that's not our position. We are not the enjoyers. We are the servants of the enjoyer.
I'm just saying that, isn't that the result? It results in that coming down, results into knowingly, even though we know that it's a simple activity, we commit simple because to enjoy.
Yeah, because the desire to enjoy, the sinful desire to enjoy, we commit so many varieties of sinful activities trying to be the enjoyer. But that process doesn't work. You can't be what you are not. No matter how hard you try, you cannot be the enjoyer. It's impossible, because you are the servant. That's right. Okay, so we'll stop here. Yes, all right.
Even in this question, it says in Bhagavad Gita, Tamesha Krodesha Rajogun Sabut Bhava, Mahasana Mahapapma, Vidam Yav Virina. This is given example sometimes we have seen that the devotees too. They have the knowledge, but still they commit some sinful activities. They related this question so far. The two, three gun, Rajogun, Tamogun, Sattva. Just give an example, just like Hanuman. When he went to Lanka, he has been destroyed.
Who?
Hanuman,
okay.
When he went to Lanka, he just says Sita, and he just banned the Lanka too. But is it related to Nirvana Krishna Sambandhi? It was for Krishna's duty, he has bent alankar. But in the Sankara devotee too, they know it's a simple activity, but they commit the sin. So why in this case, why they have to do that?
What is it?
He is saying that, like it's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, Krama, Saprodesha, Manjibana. So in the two modes of like, he's giving the example of Hanuman, that Hanuman became angry, and anger is a sinful activity, but he was doing in service of Krishna.
Yes, that is transcendental anger.
And then, but the devotees knows that anger is a sinful activity, so why they
can... Oh, no, no, anger is only sinful if it's for your own sense gratification. If anger is done for the pleasure of Krishna, then that is transcendental. Prabhupada explains how Hanuman became angry, and Arjuna, they became angry. To fight on the battlefield, to kill someone, to develop the mood where you can actually kill someone, you have to be in an angry mood to do that. You can't do that in a peaceful mood. You know, to jab a spear in their body and put in and wipe them out, you know, requires anger. So Prabhupada says that anger is transcendental, the anger of Arjuna to kill the enemy soldiers.
His question was, why devotees sometimes commit sinful activities while performing devotional service?
Why devotees perform sinful activities? Because their hearts are not pure. They still have material desires. That's a very simple thing. Any pure devotee will never do any sinful activity. Yeah, we that's the fact. They are, because they're still polluted with material desires. That's why they're committing sinful activities. Their hearts are not pure. They're lusty.
So devotees in that case,
they're greedy.
Will have a reaction for that. In that case, devotees will have a reaction for that.
Of course. If you perform some sinful activity, you must suffer some reaction to that.
And the Maharaj, prisoners, they go and serve certain years in the jail, and they come out from the jail. After some time, they call, again they do wrong thing again, but they know that they will go to jail again. But again they do the nasty things.
That lusty desire is so strong that one will think, it doesn't matter. Let me get that. They want that immediate gratification of their lust so badly, even they know they're going to be punished like anything for it, they still do it anyway. You see? Just like sometimes you may have a very bad itch on your body, and you know if I scratch it, it's going to get 10 times worse, so I better not scratch it. But the itch sometimes bothers so bad that you scratch it anyway. For the full knowledge, you're going to suffer like anything, but at least you get that. For a second, you get some sense of relief. You see, it's like them.
Just like we have seen the example for Viva Mandala Thakur. He was a Vaishnava.
Who Thakur?
Viva Mandala Thakur.
Viva Mandala Thakur, okay.
He was Vaishnava.
He was a Vaishnava, but he has so much desire.
In his previous lifetime, but then he became a, you know, a wealthy man's son, aristocratic, wealthy Brahmin family with money and, you know, facility for enjoyment. He fell down, but his guru saved him. He reappeared in the form of a prostitute. Can you imagine what the guru went through to help his disciple, becoming a prostitute, just to save his disciple? So we should not trouble our Guru Maharaj. You see, like that Guru Maharaj had to become the Chintamani prostitute. We should not trouble our Guru Maharaj. He has to come back in some awkward position in this material world just to save us. We should all become pure devotees. Yes. Okay. Speaking of pure devotion, now let's have the darshan of those beautiful lords. Purify our hearts by their darshan. Raja Vidya Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.